It makes a difference where I am. I still don't understand God's strategy. I have to be honest with you, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be. I love you. God could have asked me to lay my life down for people I didn't even like, so at least I get to do it for people I love, which is, you know, that's not a small thing. And there's, it remains a beautiful state. And the beauty restores my soul. But when the Lord showed me that thing of, Bob, who you are is your ministry. And if you are in rotten surroundings, guess who put you there? Guess why I put you there? I put you there not to bellyache and to whine. I put you there to be a preservative so that it's not rotting. And you know what? I stopped praying to get out of there. And I just started praying, well, then, Lord, I don't want to lose my saltiness. I realize I may have to be more filled with Jesus on a minute-by-minute daily basis than I've ever had to be. Because before I came here and we did this job, I spent 90% of my time around Christians. Which does, you know, sometimes have its drawbacks, but way different than here. And all of a sudden I realized, hey, it's rotten. Hey, well, that's where you put the salt, isn't it? It's dark. That's where you turn the lights on. And the Lord reminded me when I moved to the island that I lived at in Washington State. I was in the Christian bookstore, and I told some people that I on the mainland that I was moving over to the island. And, of course, these were all people who wanted God to send one tactical nuclear device and just obliterate the whole island because it was filled with New Age people and homosexuals and, you know, people that weren't like us. And, you know, God just nuke them all. And God was sending me over there to live there. And people were just horrified, saying, but you don't want to go there. That's full of sinners. It's so dark there. And I thought, well, yeah, but isn't that where you turn the lights on? And secondly, if we treat these people like we want a tactical heavenly nuclear device to obliterate them, how are any of them going to get saved? How are any of them going to know that God loves them if every Christian in town hates their guts? Somewhere we're missing something. We don't understand God's heart. So salt was used as a preservative. It was used as a flavoring, although in Middle Eastern cultures, not very much. That was a very, very secondary use of salt. But it does bring up one interesting thing. When we get to Acts chapter 10, which who knows when that'll be, because we're in chapter 5 right now on Wednesdays, but when we get to chapter 10, there's a wonderful little innocuous statement made by Stephen that says, Jesus Christ went around, and the King James Bible said, doing good. Which I thought, well, duh, you know, of course he did. But it was when I was doing a word study of all the different Greek and Hebrew words for good that I stumbled on one of my favorite Greek words, which is the word kalos, K-A-L-O-S, which is an artist's word. It's a craftsman's word. It's a Leonardo da Vinci word. It's a Michelangelo word. It's a James Taylor playing the guitar word. It means to be artistically and efficiently and aesthetically perfectly adjusted. It's a great word. It means you walk all around it, you smell it, you lift it up, you look at it, you listen to it, and it's beautiful. In fact, it's almost always translated beautiful. And in Acts chapter 10, if you read it in the Greek text, it says, Jesus Christ went around making things beautiful. It didn't matter what they looked like when he got there. When he left, they were beautiful. It was his vapor trail. Every place he walked through, when he walked through, he left the residue of kalos behind him. And of course, that preaches really well, doesn't it? Because I could say, is that what your job is like after you leave your workplace? Is it more beautiful because Jesus was there? Is that what your conversations with your relatives are like after you leave? Is there the residue of kalos there? Well, of course, I think most of us would look at that and say, eee, Not true. Well, what's the solution to that? I need more salt in my diet. I need more light shining out of me. I need more Jesus. Jesus needs to be shining out because that's what he's going to do. So who you are really is your ministry. I was thinking of something that Sandra said a couple of Wednesdays ago when you were feeling kind of bad. Remember that night? And you just said, well, I just feel like I'm not doing anything. And I thought, but you're filled with Jesus. And it's who you are that's your ministry. It's not what you're doing. And you can be filled with Jesus any place, doing anything. In fact, if I'm doing that, I'm going to find out that stuff that I looked at as just normal stuff, really, they were assignments. And I'm going to look back and realize the stuff I thought where I was doing God a big favor may not have been that important. But the way you live your life is important. Because you're the salt of the earth. Which, folks, by the way, is why the devil just loves to get church people totally disconnected from the heart of Jesus. So that when we go in, we make things worse instead of better. When we go in, instead of people being preserved, we make it worse. The enemy loves that. There are two other things that salt does that I just want to add, although nobody but snack food companies would ever purposely make things salty to create thirst. But that actually is one of the properties of salt. It makes people thirsty. And it reminded me of something, and I'm just going to pass it on to you because as I was pondering this, the Lord spoke this to me and applied this to me. Because I grew up in church. I grew up in a very legalistic denomination with a view of God that basically God was unpleasable. And people were unpleasable, and the only way that you could hope to measure up is number one, if you were perfect, or if you could fake like you were perfect. If you could fake like you were perfect while people were watching you, then you were going to be okay. Nobody was going to be in your face. And of course, some people were quite good at that. That's never satisfactory to our hearts. If that's the way you're trying to relate to God, that's just never going to fill you up. It just isn't. And I was in my last year of college in Southern California, and I met through a recording session that I was at, I met a very famous person who had four daughters, and one of them, her and I sort of clicked with each other, and I began to date her, and as a result, her family wanted to spend lots of time with me, especially her father. He wanted to spend lots of time getting to know me. And of course, as I was reading out my doctrinal resume, you know, I don't drink, I don't chew, I don't run around with girls that do, I don't cuss, you know, I don't go to movies, I don't wear lipstick, or whatever the list was that we had in the church that I had, I thought I was okay. They were not quite comfortable with me. Although, you know, I look squeaky clean. I was the youth leader in my high school class at church. But I noticed something about them. I noticed that they had a completely different relationship with Jesus than I did. Jesus was the center of everything in their life. And for me, the best I could say is that church was the center of my life. I didn't know how Jesus would be the center. He was just sort of out there. But they acted like they couldn't make it through a day without their arms around Jesus. And I just wasn't used to that. It kind of creeped me out at first. I felt very exposed. I tried my little church guy routine, and it didn't work. You know how when you look people in the eyes and you're playing a game and they're not playing a game, and you look in there and you realize you're exposed, they can see right through you. That was the way I was around these people. And I felt like God told them secrets, and they had this sort of secret relationship going on with God. And that really ticked me off because my resume was as good as their resume. I mean, doctrinally, I had it, but there was something that they had I did not have. And it drove me nuts. And I remember one night out in their guest room, thinking, I need to talk to God about this. So I got out of bed and I knelt down. I was one of those people that thought, well, you don't have to kneel down to pray because God, you know, can hear you. But you know what? I just suddenly felt kind of humble. And I knelt down on the bed and I started to pray and I realized, no, this isn't low enough. And I spread myself out on the carpet, spread eagle with my lips in the carpeting. And I just started weeping and I said, God, I'm going to ask you something. I want you to kill me right now or else change me. Because what it is that I have and what it is that they have is so different. It's like life and death. And I don't want to be dead anymore. I've already been a Christian for 8 years. But when I became a Christian, the church got between me and the Lord, and my relationship with God was through the church, period. Through the rules, through the monitors, through the enforcers. I did not know how I could walk and talk with Jesus at all. And he began at that moment to show me the difference. That was the moment that I began to drink deeply of the living water that Jesus talked about. But it was that year or so that I spent around this family that I was getting thirstier and thirstier and thirstier. And I realized, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is they have, I don't have it. And it changed me. And I can never go back. I could never go back because now I know something. I know who quenches your thirst. Remember when Jesus met the woman at the well in Samaria? The woman who had such a bad reputation that she couldn't even come to get water when all the other women came. She had to come in the middle of the day when no one in their right mind would go outside. She had to come because all the other women despised her. Remember, Jesus is looking at her and she's carrying on this almost flirtatious sort of interchange about coming to the well and getting water. And at one point she said, you know, I just wish I didn't have to keep coming here. And Jesus says, no, that's not your problem. That's not the thirst that you need quenched. He said, you've had 5 husbands, and the guy you're living with now isn't even your husband. And he said, you're trying to fill up your heart with men. It's not going to work. You're trying to fill up your heart with relationships. It's not going to work. He said, if you'd ask me, I would give you living water, and you'd never be thirsty again. What makes people around you thirsty? I can only think of one thing, and that's the life of Jesus leaking out of us, and it will do that. In fact, some of us are here today, aren't we? Aren't some of us born again? Simply and purely and simply because God put somebody in our path that made us thirsty for that living water. And then when we came to Jesus, we realized we could have as much as we wanted. The other thing that salt does, I was thinking about this when I was remembering our Israel tour. We stayed in this fabulous multi-million dollar spa and resort on the Dead Sea, where people come and spend huge quantities of money to come and just sit in water from the Dead Sea, which was highly salinated and filled with minerals. And the reason was because it healed their wounds. It healed skin conditions. And one of the things that salt does, and it may be related to the fact that it is a preservative. It may be part of that same function. And once again, as I look at that, I think, okay, if God wants to be in me, if he wants me to be that salt in the world that I'm in, he's going to send wounded people to me so that Jesus can bring healing to them. And if I find wounded people to be a little bit uncomfortable to me, then some of them are just going to go through their lives with those wounds and Jesus isn't going to be able to heal them. So there's lots of ways to look at what it means to be salt of the earth. But I'll just pass that on to you. You know, the environment that you have around you disgusting as it may be the very reason why you're there. Now, I was thinking about Susan running for political office and I was thinking, I hate politics. I would rather be punched in the face than to be involved in politics. I'm not joking. I hate it. I detest it. I am really grateful that there are some people who are filled with Jesus who say, okay, yeah, it's rotten. It's a rotten system that's not working, but I don't want it to get worse. So I'm going to take the salt with me. I'm going to take Jesus with me so that it all doesn't rot. The entertainment business. Use car sales. I don't know, pick something that looks rotten. Your neighborhood. You're the salt of the earth if you have Jesus in you. I will admit that Jesus made a really good point. If the salt doesn't have what salt is supposed to have, it isn't going to do any good. You can put on all the rotten meat that you want and nothing's going to happen. So if God's planted me in a place where it's rotting, then I need to be filled with him. Maybe to an extraordinary degree. That's another thing I discovered. I discovered that my walk with the Lord has to be really different than it was when I hung around with Christians all the time. I need to be fuller of him on a daily basis just to be able to make a difference. So, you're the salt of the earth. Light of the world, that's another one that is just a real easy metaphor. It's imagery that comes to our mind so easily. If he's living in us, the primary purpose of light is to dispel darkness. And I already told you, it doesn't take a lot of light to do that. But there are some things we need to look at as I've been pondering this as well. It fits right very, very well into what I've already been saying. They're just two word pictures that are saying the same thing. They're saying you are planted where you're planted for a reason, to make a difference. I've always found it kind of one of those kind of things when Jesus said a city set on a hill can't be hidden. Because it means you are a witness. If you're a Christian, you're a witness, either a good one or a bad one. The one thing you aren't is invisible. We can't be invisible. Not if Jesus is in us. He is going to provoke hostile reactions from some people. He's going to provoke the kind of reactions from people that a glass of cool water would to someone that's dying of thirst. But we aren't invisible. And I find that very challenging because I realize, you know, I'm not always a good example. And of course, that's easily remedied. I just need him in control of my life and shining out of my life. Light is meant to be seen. The primary purpose is to dispel darkness. And I wrote down three things, really, primary operations of light in that culture and in our culture. Three things that are not in any particular order. We'll talk about them this morning. One is to make important things more visible. And two is to guide our actions when we're surrounded by darkness, to guide our steps. The Bible's filled with scriptures about that. And the third one is to protect us from injury or becoming lost. Purpose of light is to dispel darkness, making important things more visible. Of course, not everyone's going to respond favorably to that. There are some people, you're going to waltz in to their lives with the light shining in you, and they're going to want to punch the lights out because they don't like what it shows. I told the story, was it Wednesday? I can't remember, Wednesday or last Sunday, of my friend who was a waitress who got everybody at work mad at her because she decided to be honest about declaring all of her tips. And of course, none of them were declaring all of their tips. And so you've got one person working in the workplace that's listing two or three times as much as their income as everyone else. And they all ganged up on her one day and said, "You're making us look bad." And she said, "Well, how is me being honest and you stealing making you look bad? I have to do what's right. Some people are not going to be real happy with that. When my father had his accident that left him with brain damage, and we really, it was just machines keeping him alive until God really touched him and did, I don't know what it was, we were all gathered around his bed praying, and he came out of that state. But over the period of the next couple of months, people would come to his hospital. The word would get around, it was in the paper, and word would get around, and people would come to just stand by his hospital bed, even though he couldn't really respond to people, often couldn't recognize them or didn't know they were there. But people just wanted to come to talk to us, to talk to my mom, to tell us how much my father had meant to them. If you'd have asked my dad, did you make a difference in your world, he would have probably said no, because he just didn't think he was anything special. He was just a guy that worked at the same job for 29 years that was crazy in love with Jesus and didn't mind if anybody knew about it. So as a result, of course, he was the manager of a music store, and you don't always get the most socially responsible people hanging around music stores. It was a town that had a huge homeless population, and in California, where it's easy to be homeless compared to here because the weather is so much nicer. He just always had irritating people around him. He had people working with him who hated Christians. And my dad was just unfazed. But you know the thing we kept hearing over and over and over from people? Some people who hadn't worked with him for 20 years, but had worked with him 20 years earlier for 7 or 8 years. They all said the same kind of thing. They all said, I remember one guy looking at me and he says, your father is the only totally honest man I've ever met in my life. Many people said, your father is the only one that was ever kind to me in my life. And a picture started emerging of somebody who was a living example of things that people thought were idealism, like honesty and courtesy. Things like that, the people in our culture are so jaded that they just look and think, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fairy tales. So the light in your life is going to illuminate the important things. In fact, the more dark it is, the more the light will illuminate the important things.